Hello and welcome to Bad End. This is episode, I absolutely forgot what number it is.
18,
baby. It's number 182. Hey, you know what? It's also the year 2018. So,
whoa.
When we started this, I planned that.
Yeah, I mean, so we...
I'm glad it lined
up. We took a couple weeks off for the winter break, but we have been keeping up with our typical shit posting. Hope you guys are enjoying that. I really hope that you can retweet our stuff in the future if you like
the
shit.
Engage with our content.
Engage with our content. Like and subscribe, retweet, all that good stuff. My name, as always, is Josh Calixto. I'm a writer for Kotaku and sites like RollingStone.com.
I'm Kyle Cookstell. I used to write about video games. Now I mostly just make them, and I help create the virtual reality future. I've also been playing video games, but there's someone else on the podcast too, I think.
Yeah, I'm Katie McCarthy. I am a writer for usgamer.net, former freelancer, and today we are joined by a very special guest. We got a fourth person on Bad End Podcast today. We got the Korean Jason Schreier himself. Hey. Matt Kim.
Hi. I don't think I like that.
I knew you would hate that.
I don't think
intro,
I enjoyed
so.
That a lot, actually. Hi, I'm Matt Kim. I work with Katie at US Gamer, and I'm their news editor, and that's my only relation to Jason Schreier, is that we both have the same job title.
Wait up, I want to learn more about this official title that you have, Matt. So, are you one of the best journalists in the field?
Yes.
Do you report on all the big stories and scoops?
Yes, and I am the best at that.
Would you call yourself a, quote, hard-hitting journalist?
Yes, I would. In my blood.
Okay, well, I want to start...
I mean, that's it for me. I don't know what else you need.
Yeah, you totally earned that title, in my opinion.
Do you self-describe as a U.S. gamer, an US gamer, or a use gamer?
I like to think that we're... You know, I've never been asked that before. Now that I think about it, US gamer actually sounds a lot nicer. You know, it's like collective and friendly. And
US gamers.
You know, it's us gamers. Yeah, honestly, probably that. But for work purposes, I guess I have to identify as a US gamer.
Bummer. Well, yeah. What games have you been playing recently? I want to hear what are the hot games of 2018 so far?
Yeah.
So
of the hit 2 weeks.
Hit me with some good.
Yeah, hit me with the fire right now.
The secret is that we don't play video games. We just have other people play them, and they tell us about them.
We have just Katie tell us, because
I know what plays
just Katie
game.
Plays
yeah.
games.
I feel exposed, because I also haven't been playing video games since this year started. I've been playing, what's it called, Getting Over It with... Bennett Foddy.
Bennett Foddy, baby.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Been a hot toddy.
I've been honestly using my free time to catch up on the games that I missed out on. So I've been doing that, and once I quit it, because I don't think I'll ever beat it, I plan on starring Doki Doki Literature Club, which I've heard a lot about from Katie and other people, but it's like 3 hours or something, but I just don't feel like it, so...
Yeah.
I want to say something really quickly about this game, because we actually had a request... in our emails recently to talk about Doki Doki Literature Club.
Whoa.
So he also asked for podcast recommendations, but we're not going to discuss that on air, because why would I want to talk about other people's
podcasts? I recommend subscribing to Bad End Podcasts, liking, following us on Twitter.
And the usgamer.net.
US Gamer Podcast. I think if you actually go to the iTunes recommendations have... US Gamer recommendations under Bad End, so it's already like a natural fit.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I'm glad to see that. Glad to see that shared listener group.
But you haven't, Matt, you haven't started playing Doki Doki, is that correct?
I've not, no. But I mean, I just hear that it's gonna, like, what's the rule on cursing on this podcast?
You go ahead.
You can just do it. Right, like, one of our go-to
aside
categories
from like,
is fuck.
Oh, don't fucking spoil yourself. It's fucking wild. Like, that's all I know about it. And it's like, it's not anime bullshit like you think it is. And that's literally all that's it. That's all I know about Doki Doki Literature Club.
Okay, there's one more thing you should know about Doki Doki Literature Club, which is that for the first, like, 2 hours, it is anime bullshit. So,
oh, okay.
That's one thing is like...
You were misled.
Yeah. To me, the thing about the game... that I think makes it hard for some people, at least ones people who I know who are like very curmudgeonly critics typically, they're very like, you know, I got like 2 hours in and it was just still total bullshit. I didn't want to put up with anymore. And I totally get that. I totally agree with that. But, you know, if you're willing to do the wait for it for like a certain period of time, then it will potentially pay off for you, depending on whether you're going to, the twist is going to jive with you or not, which I don't know. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. For me, I thought it was creative. I thought it was original. I thought it did something that I had wanted to see games do for a while. And I won't go into detail about that because I don't want to spoil it for you. But definitely check it out. I mean, I also personally didn't think it was like that scary, but, and some people like really got freaked out by it, but
yeah, I don't get why that it got that reputation, because I was like, I wasn't scared. I don't know, it's just kind of like weird. I don't know. But I also didn't like super love it like a lot of people did. I feel like I was just kind of like, yeah, it was like, it had some cool stuff, but I feel like as it waned on, I got less into it.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the first twist hit me and I was like, that's really cool, and then I just kind of was like, eh. But I feel like it's still worth playing, mm-hmm. just to see, like, what's up with it, like, the deal. But it's like, if you just get spoiled, I feel like it kind of ruins the impact of everything.
Yeah. Mm. It's kind of like Eraserhead. Like, it's not actually fun to experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, like,
okay. Classic Lynchian visual novel. Quite the reference right there.
Sorry to the
listeners. This was, like, a thing that, like, we talked about this a bit in, like, some conversations I'd have with Josh and Katie about, like, this, like, there's, like, this type of game that takes you through like multiple hours of pedantic bullshit to like get to like the part. I think my biggest reference for this was like Spec Ops The Line,
which is yeah.
like, it's like 10 or 8 hours of like generic shooter to get to like the twist, but it's still like 10 to 8 hours of generic shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure I'm like down with the format, especially like if it's not trying to do stuff that's interesting. It's like, be generic, because then it like subverts the generic with the twist, but that doesn't actually engage with the fact that you do still have to play for two to however many hours of a game to then get to like the part. So I've personally tired of that, but
I feel like it's like this, the way that like a creator might think about something where it's like, oh, I have this really great idea for a game, and the idea for a game is like the ending to a game. Like I could totally see Jonathan Braid with Jonathan Braid Blow, that's his nickname I've given him,
aka The Witness.
AKA The Witness. I feel like he probably did this for The Witness too, which is he has like this idea for like, I want a game that like at the very end it's gonna like, you can reverse time, but what if we use that as like a narrative device where at the end it's like a big twist, you know, spoilers for Braid here, but
the game's yeah, like, I feel like he old. Has
I, like, I know
spoiler
but
alert.
Like I feel like you start you know, you could potentially have this idea for a game. I doubt he would. I don't know if he was like, whoa, what if there was like a game was like a platform that you could rewind time. I feel like it's almost just as likely that he could have started with the concept for what happens at the end of this game, and then the rest of it kind of unfolds from there. If you have some like gimmick or twist at the end, it's going to take you a lot longer to justify that. Just like I feel like it's probably what happened with Doki Doki Literature Club, because I don't think they wanted to pay tribute to visual novels as much as they wanted to do something with like a trippy ending where you wouldn't expect that using a visual novel. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel like Doki Doki specifically, like it doesn't lean on the visual novel structure as much as I kind of expected it to. I don't know, like when I, like Hatful Boyfriend's like one of those recent like subversive visual novels or whatever, where like if you've played every ending or whatever with the pigeons and you do all your romances or whatever, and the final ending or the true route, I guess, is where you're you basically, it flips to where you're playing as your like best friend pigeon, like your buddy pigeon, and it's like this crazy like murder mystery it turns into, and it's like this really wild like super over dramatic route. And I feel like that game really leaned on like the visual novel structure in part, or the I guess it would be like a tome genre, which is like dating genres or dating games. I feel like that game like leaned more on the structure, and I kind of wish Doki Doki Literature Club leaned on the structure ever more, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean that's kind of my question with this, is like if it's actually, if there's just an interesting idea at the very end, or it's actually doing interesting stuff with the format up until then, Like, is it in a dialogue with other visual novels, or does it feel like someone had a cool idea and they're like, visual novels are a great way to put this cool idea into practice? And then they kind of like skipped a lot of the actual like background and history of visual novels just to implement this like one thing.
I wouldn't say it does a great job of that, but I feel like they did do their research. Like, it's not just a total approximation shooting in the dark, but it's also not like these people have loved visual novels. It's like a total love letter to the genre type thing. You know what I'm saying? It's somewhere in between those things. Like, if you're looking for a really awesome tribute to visual novels, that's not what you're coming to Doki Doki for. And probably, as Katie said, you'd go to like Had a Full Boyfriend for something like that, right? I don't know if you guys have anything else to say about this, but I wanted to hear more about Getting Over It, actually, because I haven't had the chance to play that, but I've been trying to, you know, synthesize some thoughts on that. And Matt, I wanted to see like what you might have to say about that game so far.
I really like it. I think my former roommate, because I just moved, my former roommate pitched it to me as a like Twitch bait Trojan horse, where it seems like a game that would just be really popular with like Twitch streamers and YouTubers, but it's actually like a real, you know, quote unquote art game with, you know, with like, what's his name? Bennett Foddy? With like him like narrating his like design philosophy and going through like, talking to you about the process of like loss and like temporality of like success and things like that, you know? And it was really surprising. And I think I was talking with him. We were driving together once, and I just finished like a really hard part that I was stuck on for days. I think it was like that narrow two cliffs with like the couple lanterns that you're supposed to like swing back and forth to in like rapid succession, and I was stuck on that for actual days until I finally just beat it like that afternoon. And we were in a car ride, and I was like, you know, that game's making me into a really good Buddhist. Like, I'm no longer like at the end of each playthrough, pretty much I basically end up at the bottom because I have no fear now, you know? Like, I'm not afraid of losing my progress at all anymore, and so I'm willing to start at the bottom at each playthrough if it means getting a little further. And also, that game's like super ingenious, because it does what a game's supposed to do, where once you overcome a challenge, it becomes really easy. Like, it took me days to do that cliff thing, but now I can do it in, you know, actual seconds and just go past it. So I think it's a surprisingly good game. I think it worked. I hope we see a lot more of these kind of like Twitch streamy games that are just really good too. So
yeah, it's funny, because I have seen it a lot on Twitch streams. I watch a lot of League of Legends streams because I follow it. And these are people who are, I would say, mechanically gifted at video games. You know, you'll see them like play like Osu or something like that, and they're just like fucking put 1,000 inputs per second, like absolutely insanely precise mouse movement. And playing this game, they're just like, you see them getting so frustrated at like how they're not able to make progress. And I haven't really been hearing any of the voiceover or anything, because they don't on a Twitch stream, they're not like, you know, they're not putting it front and center.
Like, they're like talking.
Yeah, they're not going like, oh, this is a really interesting monologue. No, it's usually like on mute or something like that. Yeah, like, I like the idea of like a quote Trojan horse for Twitch, because, I mean, when it comes down to it, this is some like weird ass avant garde like new art type shit going on. Because Bennett Foddy does have that kind of reputation in the video games community as being this like great indie creator who has a lot of really awesome things to his name. And to see it on Twitch is super surreal to me, just because it has this like sort of gimmick to it, but also depth that people are doing a pretty good job of ignoring. But hey, maybe it's getting through to somebody.
I mean, like, in some ways it feels like Bennett Foddy is one of the, like, OG, like, viral game creators. Like, he made Quap. You know, it's not, like, that's, my mom knows what Quap is.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I don't know, she actually knows what Quap is, but it's one of the things where a lot of his games have lent themselves to this, like, high skill bar through, like, just pure mechanical execution, which is, like, such, like, so perfect for what Twitch is. I would even, like, maybe he thought about Twitch when he was making the game, but I feel like he would have made this game if had Twitch not been a thing. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely it's super cool, and it's cool to see it out, but I don't think it's a mystery why people are streaming it. And I, as like a Trojan horse, is like hard to say. I think it's just like it's fun to watch.
I mean, I would,
for what you were saying of like people that are good at stuff like failing to be good at something, and to like seeing your favorite streamer who plays at the top of an esport or something just like fall on their fucking face continually.
Right.
There's an immense satisfaction to that.
I mean, you're right. It's impossible to say whether he would have made this game without Twitch or not. But like Quap, he is pretty talented when it comes to like channels for disseminating this work. Like Quap was huge because it was like a Flash game that like got really big on Newgrounds and stuff like that. And I remember like it went viral because it had this great channel for doing so. And it's not like he's making these games with an art style that's going to look pretentious or anything like that. Like, I'm getting over its whole thing is you're a dude in a fucking cauldron holding
a
ugliest hammer.
Looking thing.
Yeah, it is. Like, it's really slapstick. And, like, when you just see the guy, like, waving the stick around, and you're like, the person's clearly trying to figure out like how to move the stick, and it's just like the weirdest hand.
It's like the meme with like the math appearing around. How is this supposed to work?
Yeah. The calculus of trying to move around your hammers.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Twitch streamers or YouTubers, I don't watch a lot of them, so I don't know what they're like regular like day to day stuff, but it seems to me like weird games are in their avenue, right? Because they can like bounce off that with their own personality, right? Or react to it, right? So they could just like a talentless streamer can just be like, ah, oh, that's so weird, huh? Right? But like, what if in like pursuit of that like weirdness, just to like shock their audience, they pick up something like what was it, Everything, right? Remember that game?
Right.
Yeah.
Like they pick up Everything, and they're like what, a high schooler who's just like trying to get into YouTube. Like, oh, it's so weird, I'm a giraffe now, huh? I'm rolling around.
Yeah, honestly.
And then like he like expands into universe, and then the monologues happen, and he starts crying on stream.
I mean it's also like it's fucking obnoxious because a lot of people like that use these games as a pivot to like make fun of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they're like looking at it and engaging with it from like any sort of like critical level. It's like it's the argument that people make against Cards Against Humanity, which is that you don't have to be funny. The game is funny for you.
Mm.
So these games with these really strong personalities, people can stream them and be like, oh, it's crazy. And everybody has to agree with it because the game looks ridiculous, but it defers these people's like need to develop a personality around something that's like boring, and can just be like, oh, this thing I'm showing is interesting in and of itself, and I can laugh at it and you get it, and I don't have to perform. Which is like fine if you're like just getting started, but I think like a really talented streamer can take something that's very boring and actually make it be interesting through their own personality. But I think that games like this and stuff like Everything and stuff like Mountain and like stuff like Oikospiel and stuff like smaller games that came out last year can be something that people can just show off and be interesting in and of itself and not have to necessarily like ride on the ability to be able to craft a personality around something.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I talked to Robert Yang, like, last summer, and I know he's talked about this in the past, too, but, like, his games are notoriously banned on Twitch because their sexual content, quote, like, whether it's explicit or not, it's pretty much, like, they have gay undertones, so they're banned, and he's never been given a real reason why. But it's, like, when I was interviewing him, he was talking about how, like, a lot of YouTubers and Twitch streamers, or, like, just people that would, like, do Let's Plays of his games, would do it for the sole reason of making fun of it. Like, haha, this thing's super gay. Like, haha, like,
right.
Just, like, poking fun at it and not taking it at, like, a serious level. And it's weird because, like, Yang's games have inherently had this, like, silliness to them, but it's not in a haha gay way. It's, like, in just, like, you know, just making light of these real life things, and I don't know where I was going with that, but it's just like, you know, it's there's definitely like layers to play, like game makers catering to this like new YouTube Twitch audience, which is like a totally viable audience that is like consuming games for the sole reason of playing them for a live audience. And I feel like getting over it seems to be capturing that zeitgeist of people taking it seriously, and like people just like, oh, I fell, it sucks, like haha, like this looks really stupid, and that type of
Robert Yang is like a super good example of that, because you're right that people do, I'm sure, misinterpret what he's trying to do all the time. But I mean, it would be awesome to see, you know, as developers start catching on to like, oh, this is, you can make a game that, I'm sure we're going to see a lot more games that are this year that are going to come across only, you know, through word of mouth on Twitch and stuff like that, that have these like mechanical hooks or like slapstick hooks that go along really well when you're watching someone else play it. But maybe we will see like a true sort of Trojan horse art game that is kind of shoved down people's throats, but also has a good and interesting like message or hook to it.
I have not been playing like anything. I've been like on this weird break. Like I played a lot of Style Savvy for like a week because the new Style Savvy game came out on Christmas Day. So loaded that up on my 3DS. Like literally my 3DS was dead. Like I had left out the charger, so I had to like charge it to a full charge, and I had not touched my 3DS in God knows how long. And it's like a fine, it's just a Style Savvy game. Like there's nothing super special about it. So I don't know, like I haven't been playing, like I started playing Prey and I liked the beginning, but I fell off it really quick. I've been playing a lot of Battlegrounds. Like I've fallen like really back into Battlegrounds since 1.0 came out.
Hell yeah, same.
Yeah, like yeah, it's yeah, like we played recently, like I don't know, like I've just been playing a lot of Battlegrounds. Like that's the only game I play now. But I like, who knows if I'll ever follow that.
I forgot I've been playing a game.
What game?
Xenoblade Chronicles 2.
Oh.
Yeah. What a game, dude. What a freaking
very,
game.
Very, it's a very JRPG.
I'm so excited to start playing that in like 4 months.
It is like, yeah, it is. If you want a JRPG, this game has got your freaking back. Because it's like, it's got the 15-minute cutscenes. Mm. It's got the like every single character has... you must have at least this large of breasts with at least this proportion of them showing to be in mm-hmm. the game type stuff. Like
there's got to be statistics for that.
Yeah.
Like it's like every woman in that game is cleavage and they're all wearing like E cups. And I'm like, what the F?
It's so weird.
They have back problems. Every woman in that game has back problems.
Cause the first Xenoblade never looked like that. Like it had a completely different art style.
Yeah, it was
which
way
was like
different.
Super avant-garde too. Like the
this is
dudes
like way
were wearing like wetsuits, you know?
Yeah.
Like it was super strange.
It was very like Final Fantasy X.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened.
No, yeah. I remember the first trailer they showed for Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I was like, "What the hell are they wearing?" Like it was just such a shock. Like I was like, "What happened to the art design in this game?" I don't know. The thing that strikes me the most, it's because what they did is they have a bunch of different character designers, like. They have the... what's his... God, I can't think of his name. The Kingdom Hearts guy.
Yeah, oh yeah, the Zipper Man.
Yeah, Zipper Man. That guy. Like, you could tell the characters he designed when they walk in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, they have the spiky hair.
Yeah.
They got the zippers. You, like, you just know. And they also have, like, a bunch of other, like, character design. Like, it's just, like, a weird thing where it looks so cluttered because they grabbed, like, 50 big, like, big-name character designers from Japan. And it's, like, it just looks like a mess. Like... and it's sad because I feel like the world design of that game is really good. Like, I love, like, the whole idea of these big titans that you live on and, like, the seas of clouds. Like, aesthetically, from a world design perspective, it looks really awesome. But then the characters just stick out like a sore thumb, and it's just such a bummer.
But Josh, man, tell me about the gameplay. That's what the gamers need to know.
There's some really interesting stuff going on in this game. And I want to start with the opening area, in which you're thrown into a fucking field, right? It's this massive open world field, and it's cluttered with like level 90 dinosaurs and like level freaking 30 shit, and you're literally level 2. Like everything, I would say about 3/4 of the stuff that you can encounter in the first opening area will just destroy you. So the game isn't even about like slowly grinding in that sense. It's about like actually actively just avoiding almost everything you see. So to get to the first village took me probably like an hour and a half just because
no,
like,
and there's those bird things that fucking swoop down and kill you in like one hit. It sucks.
Dude, it's like you it's like a stealth game at first because you can't really avoid a lot of this stuff because it'll just aggro and you can't run away because you just get one-shotted. I don't know. I don't think that there's like a more optimal way I could have played this game. Like, I'm pretty sure this is what's supposed to happen. And it's really, I don't know what the purpose of this is. Like, there, and that's one thing that keeps coming up with me with Xenoblade Chronicles 2, where I'm like, I don't understand the purpose of what the hell's happening here. Like, but at the same time, I appreciate that because so often in JRPGs, I know exactly what's going on, and it's like to the point where it's just like, why is this even a game? Why, what am I even playing? Like, okay, I'm leveling up on a very linear, in a very linear way. Everything's a carrot on a stick that's immediately in front of me. But Xenoblade, it's like throwing systems at you and like throwing really weird situations at you, and progress sort of feels linear, but then it's happening on like five different dimensions that are impossible to track at the same time. So it's impossible. Like you never have a firm grasp on what exactly is happening in this game. And I kind of have over time learned to appreciate that. At first it was kind of annoying, but I'm super into it now. I am at a part where, you know, where you'll like just stop playing a game one day and then the next day you just don't play it again because that you're not hooked on it the way you were the day before. You know?
Yeah.
Like before it was like, oh, I want to play more, but I'm on like a part where I'm not as compelled. It's not like a page turnery moment of the game for me, so it'll probably take me a bit to like jump back in, but once I do, I'm sure I'll like marathon the rest of it, you know.
I got about, I want to say 20 hours in Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I think I'm done. I don't think I'm going back to it. It's a bummer because like I feel like at the start I was super into it. I was like, this is the type of JRPG I was really wanting right now, but now I've like totally fallen off it, and like when I lifted my Switch, I'm like, I'm gonna play Splatoon, I'm not gonna play Xenoblade. And I feel like that's really telling that I'm playing a game that is just like 3-minute quick matches that are mindless to a game that I feel like needs me to at least be paying attention in some way, you know. I don't know, it's weird.
Did you get to the Mithra part?
I don't even know, so probably not. Dude. I'm still on that main area, like the main village. Like I'm still running side quests. I've been like, I'm terrible. Ugh. Because there's so many side quests in that area. I'm just like, I have to do them all. So like, yeah. I'm kind of, maybe that's the worst way to play it. I need to like move on. But
side quests are weird in that game. I don't know. Like it's weird because sometimes it feels like the only way you can level up in this game is through quests. Because battles don't give you crap.
They
even if it's
shit.
Like
yeah.
way higher above your level, you don't get that much experience. But I would also say there's this one part of the game that got like super shonen, and like stuff happened that was very like Dragon Ball Z, Goku going Super Saiyan type stuff with like characters crying and like just Ooh. The passion and emotion just pouring out. And
That's
then,
like,
some character transforms in a way that, like, they didn't telegraph whatsoever. And, like, I was just like, this is it. I'm in. This is it.
Dude,
I'm on
Xenoblade.
Xenoblade,
like, since the first Wii one, the game is, like, so extra. Like, it was just always, like, so big and, like, so nuts. And there's, like, a million system. There's, like, the biggest monsters ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I feel like the breast stuff is like another layer of extra. You know, it was like if
there was
gonna
like
do all these systems,
just
have
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just have impossible boobs. Why not? No, like what? There's that one because everyone was mad about Pyra, which is the main girl, which I thought was just like it's kind of ridiculous.
JRPG
but whatever.
Normal.
Yeah, it's like normal for a JRPG. Like it didn't bother me. But then like footage came up about of like one of the blades that you can get, because in this game you're like merging with blades, which are basically just new characters that can join your party. It's like
personas,
so
I believe they're called personas.
They're basically personas, but
yeah.
humanish. I don't know. Yeah. But there's this one lady who's like blue, and she just, I don't know who designed this character because it just looks wild. I'm like, this person's never seen boobs before. Like, what's going on? It's just like she's just wearing a skin tight leotard and like. She has some cool attitude, but like, man,
she breathes through the skin.
The skin,
like, okay.
That's like
she has like weird boobs. It's
if
like
you know the reason for her skin tight leotard,
like
you would apologize
her
and be fine.
The stronger she gets, so
I mean,
she has
that's
to wear
like
less
Bayonetta, basically
to be stronger.
You don't know her backstory, Katie. That's That's why. True. You just
I mean, she's just a blade, so I don't think she would have a backstory. It'd be like, I don't know.
I think she was a dream of some character animator, and then that's since she existed.
Yeah.
I picked up Xenoblade Chronicles 2 because I really liked the first one. And I'm not a JRPG guy. Like, I can't stand the grinding and the intricacies of the whole systems and things like that. Like, I never got into it, but I was playing the first one on the Wii, and by the time it came out, the Wii was kind of on its like downward trend. Like, we
it
all
was
knew
like
that,
done.
Yeah. So we all knew that the Wii was like subpar and just kind of like inching along towards death. And I was playing the first one, and it drops you in the first open world, and the first thing I noticed is it has a jump button, which a lot of JRPGs don't have, right?
Yeah,
and
so I was like, know why JRPGs don't have jump buttons.
That, the jump button is like, any fucking RPG that has a jump button is like, it's already on my good side.
Right, know? and so I had the jump button, and I was like, I'm jumping here, I'm jumping there, I'm going to jump over here, right? And like, I'm just jumping everywhere, and then like, I'm come to a part where there's like this long, like just this wooden bridge, right? Suspension bridge that just takes you to like this like island peninsula or whatever, and I'm like jumping through the bridge because it's faster that way, and I'm like, haha, I'm gonna jump off the bridge, but no, I won't, because there's gonna be an invisible wall. No, there's no wall. I jump off the bridge, I fall like 30 feet in the game into a lake at the bottom, and then I'm swimming in the lake, and I'm like blown away, because already I can jump. There are no barriers, like I would imagine there'd be barriers in like an open world JRPG thing, right? And I'm swimming. It's already like the best thing I've ever played.
Yeah, it's like if you go back and play the first game, I think like because it's that the same team, I think we talked about this, but the same team that made Xenoblade Chronicles worked on Breath of the Wild, and like especially that first area you're talking about, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Like so much of that area just looks literally like the Zora's Domain in Breath of the Wild, and there's a lot of other I think design stuff in Xenoblade that hasn't actually been analyzed, knowing that Breath of, because it's like so far from when it came out and Breath of the Wild came out, but I think there's actually a lot more parallels to between those two games that people are like willing or like have or know about, because the game, like you said, came out like on the tail end of the Wii release, and like it only came out in London or England, and then they did a like weird exclusive GameStop release for like 2 months until
thing,
it sold out, and then they're like it was like by tooth and nail they brought it to the United States. So I think there's a lot of stuff in that game that kind of preempts a lot of what Breath of the Wild did, and I mean, admittedly did a lot better, but it's cool going back to that because that moment specifically is like so echoed inside Breath of the Wild, where you're like, oh, there's going to be an invisible wall here, and you're like, no, like you're going to like fall off this bridge and have to figure out a way how to get back up.
I'm not going to lie, like the jump button was about 3/4 of the reason why I liked WoW over other MMOs. Like any like I picked, I would pick up other MMOs and be
it was
like
a it was a very liberal jump button too. You could like jump
it was
for hell
floaty.
In that game.
You could jump over like if it added so much to the feel of exploration. Something about being able to jump, it has a lot of implications about the world that you're in, you know. And sometimes when I do jump and I hit an invisible wall, like you're saying, it's so disappointing to me because it's like you're letting me jump, but this isn't a real. There's no reason for me to be able to jump, you know? Usually the jump implies that you have some extra layer of freedom. There's more for you to check out, things for you to actually jump over in this world. But Xenoblade Chronicles 2, again, to get back to this game, another thing that kind of weirded me out about it is that after around, you know, 25 hours, again, I was watching I'm a Cutie Pie's stream, and he was like, yeah, this, what's great about this game is you just do this. And he's like pressing up on his Joy-Con, right? I'm like, why does he keep pressing up, right? And then during the game, I'm playing it, and I realize that when you press up, it's an auto attack cancel. So if you guys know anything about animation canceling, it's like in Dark Souls or something like that, you know how like when you press X your weapon swings and you have to wait for like 3 seconds while the dude picks up his sword again? Well, in Xenoblade Chronicles the animations are like about that long. They're super long and unwieldy, and there's like a lot of great axes. The normal sword that you get swings once every
so
like two
slow,
seconds
yeah.
It's so slow. But when you and the other thing is that every swing is connected to like your it's basically like your power resource. So the more times you attack, it charges up your gauge. So when you attack in this game, if you press up, it cancels the entire animation of like this the post swing thing, so you can just like keep attacking and attacking and attacking and attacking while canceling your attack, so that your gauge charges up like in a quarter of the time. But this is not something that they like tell you in the game, but I'm like 98% sure that the game is balanced assuming that you know this.
Is this like a double berry type strategy?
That's the thing, is like it's sort of like a double berry min-maxing hack type thing, but I'm pretty sure they just expect you to know it and take advantage of it, because like the way one of the mechanics works is like if you cancel one of your attacks using an art or like one of your special abilities, it gives you more power automatically. So like they already have like animation canceling built into the system, except one of the main ways of doing it, which is like just to move every time you auto attack, is not in the tutorial anywhere, but I think they just assume you know it, which is,
it's actually a super cool system.
Yeah,
the tutorial is like bonkers. It's like I had no idea what the fuck they were telling me.
Yeah,
and then until it's too late, and then I was like figuring it out just by playing it.
There's no way
to access those tutorials again, which
it's
is the worst
so
part.
Stupid.
So I have to like Google stuff. Like,
yeah,
how do I do this? I don't remember how to do this. Like, I honestly, I'm scared to go back to that game because it's been weeks since I last picked it up. I'm like, I don't know how to play a game anymore.
The thing is that the system is not complex whatsoever. It's just like when your ability comes up, use it. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's like you have to move around because you don't want to get hit by like the end, especially with big bosses. Like you have to like be moving around a fair amount, but you also want to be auto attacking, and you also want to be built so you can build up your art. And it's just like there's so much going on.
Yeah,
it's like too much. I mean, I kind of like how it's really ridiculous. Like I'm into like really ridiculous battle systems, but I don't know if I have the patience for it right now. I feel like it's one of those games I'll go back to in like a year and I'll be like, oh, pretty good.
Yeah, again, super extra.
I do wonder if like the fact that Xenoblade Chronicles has made it all the way to number 2, and having done like Xenoblade Chronicles X, that like we're gonna start seeing some of those like really weird GameCube era JRPGs come back. Like, I want to see a Baten Kaitos 3. It'd be super dope.
Let's do like new Wild Arms. Why not?
Yeah, like in a new like Evolution Worlds, like all this like old like GameCube's like IP that just got like left on the ground because like the Wii came out and they basically got rid of everything.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool, like on the Switch, like if JRPGs are popular again, that we'll start getting some like interesting JRPGs from Nintendo that aren't like mainline IP. That would be super dope.
There's that Project Octopath Traveler coming from the Bravely Default people, and I didn't like Bravely Default at all, so I'm kind of like...
Did you play the demo of Octopath?
No, but the visual style looks amazing. I haven't played the demo for Octopath, but like I'm just like cautious because I really did not like Bravely Default. It was just so heavy-handed and so much like, we're making a love letter to JRPGs type thing. And it's just, I don't know, Bravely Default really didn't grab me, so I'm worried that Project Octopath Traveler will be the type of game where it looks really cool, but not much else.
I did play the demo all the way through, and I was kind of surprised that it was definitely more interesting than just its visuals. The fighting system is like kind of weird and like super fast and not as nuanced as I think it thinks it is.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of you like just feeling like you have a lot of choices, and you just end up auto attacking because it's the best choice. But there is like this interesting like mechanic of every single character that you play as has like their special thing. So one of the characters you play in the demo has the ability to just challenge anybody to a fight. So you can just walk around town and challenge people to a fight, which is like fun and interesting. And the writing was like, it veered between like super cliche and like really modern. So it felt almost like a modern like Final Fantasy IV or something. And it was super strange. And yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'm interested to see more of that game. But the fact it exists is super cool. Like, it's a weird RPG coming out to a Nintendo console in 2018.
Yeah, and it's, like, very retro-minded. Like, the opposite end is, like, the I Am Setsuna, which is really bad. Like, from Tokyo RPG Factory, like, Square Enix, like, weird subdivision. So dull. It's, like, it's such a bummer. There's this... So, spoiler alert for this game. This really cool part in the lake, in like very, very late game, where you have like a ship and you're able to like sail all around like to the continents you've been on, and just kind of like you're basically backtracking through all the places you've been through before. But there's like a little island off the coast of like the one of the main worlds, and you go into it and it's all pixelated. It's like, and that game is like low poly 3D, so it's like such a jarring thing to just walk into this island and it's all like 16-bit pixels, and it's also like colorful, which is like super also different from the whole world because it's all snow covered and very white and like gray. And all, it's just like all the, it's basically pixels of the development team like remade as characters for like the small town, and they're all thanking you for playing the game. Aww. And it's so cute, and it made me feel bad because I was really not enjoying the game. I was like, man, if the whole world has as much like liveliness and like excitement for the genre as a single town, like weird spin-off town, has, that would be amazing. But it doesn't, and that is like a huge bummer. And it's like the only thing I remember about that game, because it stuck out from all the blandness of everything else. Like the story's really bland, the characters are bland. Like there's nothing memorable about that game, and they just ripped off Chrono Trigger's combat system. So it's like not even like an imaginative combat. It's just like, yeah, we really like Chrono Trigger, so we're just using that active time battle system.
Rip. Ouch. Did anyone else play anything?
I picked up Nier again, which I have the opposite problem of Xenoblade, which is that instead of getting to the point where I'm not going to play it anymore, I started and I just didn't want to play it, and I had to get to the point where I wanted to play it. And I got to that point, which is like the when all the robots are chanting, "This cannot continue."
Oh, which is like, oh yeah, dude.
It's like 2 hours in.
Yeah,
and I had the same question you had again, but opposite of like a normal JRPG, which is, I'm like, why am I doing any of this thing? And then it finally gets to that point, and I'm like, okay, we'll see. I feel like it'll be like, and I know you have to play it a lot of times, and like, I'm not looking forward to having to go back through all the stuff that I already did. So I can definitely see it becoming like that. It's not like that.
Yeah,
that's a misconception.
I think people hear endings, and then they're like, "Oh, I have to play through the same content over and over again." Yeah. It's not like that at all.
It streamlines the whole game so that you're skipping a lot of the stuff in between, and there's like all sorts of new stuff. So it doesn't feel like you're playing the same game three times.
Yeah, I've already found like a few like locked chests and stuff that are like inexplicably locked, so I imagine I'll be coming back to those at some point.
Right. Yeah, it's like the same world, but it's not like the same stuff. It's not like the same. Right. Yeah.
I've actually been telling people that it's like endings A and B are the same, or basically the same story from two perspectives, and then you're basically just playing Nier Automata, you know, 1.5, like the sequel directly after.
Yeah. Like the third route feels like a sequel. Yeah. To pretty much. Like it almost feels like, or maybe like the first two routes are more like a prologue to like the real shit in the last one, because that's like when all the impactful shit happens.
Yeah, Astrid, our friend of ours, had sort of brought up the point that it's not afraid to like sow seeds at the beginning and take its time doing that, that don't pay off until you get to that like third ending or the third playthrough or whatever, which I think shows a lot of like restraint on Yoko Taro's part, and it really does pay off, as evidenced by how many people just love the absolute crap out of this game. Really, once you get to that third ending, it's like there's some stuff that you've just never seen in video games before that you're probably never going to see again.
Yeah.
Like it's packed with all sorts of. And what really got me about this game too is that it doesn't just do it in like a narrative sense. It does it in the way that the gameplay is relating these ideas to you. And like it's constantly changing. You're always seeing like, wait, I'm playing a totally different playstyle than I played, a few minutes ago. Or
like the subtle camera moves to like kind of like bullet hell are really cool. Where you're like fighting, and then you're just from a different angle.
That's the thing is like, this game has like cinematography in the way that the camera moves, you know, not just from like a perspective of cutscenes of like, oh, this is the angle that it's showing me for this cutscene, but the game will switch to like a third person so that the action feels more dynamic and you're playing from a different perspective, but to the point where it's like framing things on the screen differently. I feel like there's like a really awesome cinematography piece waiting to be written about this game that I do not have the film critic background to be able to pull off, but I would love to read that personally.
I think honestly what I felt like the game was doing when you're talking about was just constantly trying to make me look up 2B's skirt, because I kept trying to like move the camera to like so I could see more across the horizon, but it kept like panning down and it would like put it so like it was more of like a canted angle, like looking up. Mm. So it's just like a taste.
Ever so
of,
slight.
Ever just
yeah.
the slightest like little peak. And I was like, I get it. I understand. She's hot. But like, let me like see what the fuck is in front of me because I'm running. But if you don't touch it, yeah, it'll start doing this like auto framing stuff. Yeah. But I think you're right in that like some of like the cinematography of the game is engaged with in a way that I've never seen before, where it doesn't even, the crazy part is that it's not like it switches and it's not like it switches and that move is like somehow distinct. It's very natural. Mm-hmm. And then also it doesn't in those moments like equip you with a different tool set. It's just, so you're using all the same like attacks and stuff, and you could play the same in like both of these like modes, which is like this third person action, like Bayonetta-esque thing. And there's this like top down bullet hell style. You can play like both of those ways at any point, but when the camera switches, you just naturally are like, okay, now I'm shooting my gun more and I have these like different angles and it feels different, but it's like totally, totally, totally seamless. And it is like super cool. But that said, like I was still finding it just like, okay, go here, kill some stuff. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I got to that like moment and I was like, okay, this is getting weird now in a way that I'm interested to keep playing more of it.
You should just know that is not an uncommon problem, and that I had the exact same problem when I was playing through the game, that I didn't even know if I was going to get through the first playthrough, because like you, I could not imagine sitting through the game a second time just because I didn't find it to be anything special.
And it's like kind of like boring. It's like, oh, it's a dilapidated city. Oh, it's like a desert.
I totally agree with you there, dude. I'm like, I'm on the same page. That's honestly
how
I felt.
So
about
I'm excited to continue playing it and seeing everything else and be able to talk candidly about it instead of talking
dance
broadly about
it,
like
exactly.
What happens.
Right.
All right. I also played another game I would like to talk about real fast. I played a fair amount of Gorgoa, which came out right before the holidays, and I played it on iPad not a ton, but like a decent amount this past week. For people who don't know, it's an iPad game, and I guess a PC game too. By a single creator. He's like working on it for like 5 or 6 years. But it's this game where you've got 4 panels, kind of like a comic book, and a story kind of takes place across these panels. But you play the game by like moving these panels around. And so like the character might be in the upper left, and then you have to make him move to like this other room. So you move a panel to the upper right and he'll move from left to right. But most, sorry. Just edit that out.
Absolutely not.
But most of the time it's not actually about like this single character. It's like you'll like go to these specific scenes and there's like a thing that kind of shows you broadly what you have to do, and so it's a lot of like weird stuff, and it's not like, it's hard to explain, but it's basically like a lot of parallel universes kind of stacked on top of each other, and so you're moving in and out of these worlds and like zooming in and out of them and kind of aligning them. So just to like spoil a little moment that's like a little further into the game, there's like a place where you've got to like zoom, you have to like zoom into like a painting and then zoom really far out to where this building is like being attacked by these big rocks. And then in another panel, you zoom really far in into this room this person's in like a different universe. And then you line them up such that this rock that was like hitting this building matches up with the top part of the bottom frame. And then the thing that was hitting it like bounces from the top of the building it was hitting and bounces down into this other scene. So it's a lot of like a lot of weird stuff like that where you're kind of aligning these things, and like there's no prescribed way about how these things interact. So every little piece feels like it kind of operates on its own internal logic, which is kind of cool. And so you're playing it and it feels a lot like you're exploring it more than you're actually playing it, because it's not like scaffolding like levels of skill. It's more of you being like, oh, what happens if I like move the clock face to the right and the tower, oh, now the tower is blank because I took the clock off of it and I put the moon inside the clock. And then that it's like, so it's a lot of like weird stuff like that.
So it's like a point and click mixed with like that one Framed game where it's like
kind of like Framed but less point clicky. Like, it's like you're only moving panels around. You're not actually like you're not really doing pixel hunting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and you can. There are things that you can't interact with, but your interaction is mostly. Your interaction is not like active, I don't think. It's not like you tap something and like a thing happens. It's very much like if you tap something, it shows you what you can basically zoom in and out of.
Mm.
And you can even just tap a panel and it will show you what you can click in a given scene. So it's really nice. I kind of get the sense that maybe before it was pixel hunty, and then the game has been published by Annapurna Interactive, the same people that did What Remains of Edith Finch, and they're doing Donut County. So it's got kind of that bent to it. And I have to feel like maybe he was pixel hunty and then they were like, no, you should put like a little more on top of this, which also really makes it nice. Cause if it was pixel hunting, it would be really annoying. So I definitely recommend it. I think it's like $5 or $6. I get the sense it's pretty short. But it's like, I wouldn't say it's beautiful, but it's all like hand illustrated and drawn. So it's definitely, it looks different. It's very easy to like.
Damn.
No, no, no. It's a very specific style. It's
backhanded.
It's like.
I wouldn't call it pretty.
It's like this specific illustration style. Yeah. Some people like really dig it. And I was like, it looks good. And you can tell it's handcrafted, which is nice. But it's not like something that's just, it's like not like the most amazing illustration ever or something. And the world is like often very, very, very like muted and toned down. So it's a lot of like weird mixes of like light brown, grays, and like muted greens, which is not like the best look. There's like some color accents in there, but yeah. Well, I mean, the visuals are like, it's not a huge part of, I mean, it is a part of it. And it's obviously, that's like where a lot of the work of the thing came in. But I would still recommend 100% playing it and supporting this guy, because it's again like a huge like passion project. It was like published by a relatively big publisher. So big recommendation for that guy.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Nice. Indie games.
All
right. Let's take a break. We'll come back.
Woo.
See you soon.
Usually in the second half, we talk about what heinous thing gamers have done recently, but because it's the start of the year and nothing bad has happened yet, we just want to talk a little bit about what we think is going to happen in 2018. Right off the bat, I think PUBG is going to go away or like become super small. If you look at the numbers, you can see that United States player base is going down, and like I think China is going up. But the biggest thing is like hackers are fucking ruining this game to the point that like a lot of people are starting to avoid it more and more and more. And I think that what you'll also see because PUBG will go away is that other companies are also starting to do Battlegrounds modes, where like I can understand that there is this nexus of want of a Battlegrounds type game, but a lot of those people inside that community might not like X, Y, or Z thing about Battlegrounds. They will double down on where X, Y, or Z is catered to them. So I think like I was looking on whatever that other streaming platform is that's not Twitch, like the really big one, like a Mixer, I think, and like half the streams are PUBG and half the streams are Fortnite like already. And then Paladins Battlegrounds just got announced. I'm sure there will be some other Battlegrounds type thing that's announced at E3, along with like a few other tentpole ones that we don't know that exist yet. So I can totally see this like massive meteoric success being a massive precedent setter for 2018. But the game itself and its player base will get smaller, and other stuff will start kind of picking up different parts of it. Because I don't feel like there's nothing like inside of the game itself, outside of it being like the original, that's going to keep people centered around this nexus.
It's been interesting to see people call this, you know, new things popping up around the Battlegrounds idea and concept as like copycats or like potential plagiarism or something like that. Because to me, even, you know, Battlegrounds is it's just a game mode. You know, it's like a
right.
It's a way to play. It's like deathmatch. You know,
it's like a way of life.
Yeah, no, I mean, nobody would say that, like, having Deathmatch in Uncharted is, like, a ripoff of GoldenEye or something like that, you know?
But they did. Like once, like, Doom and Quake came out, people called them, like, Quake or Doom clones because they're like, oh, you just have a gun and you're running around and shooting. So sure. It's, like, it's totally a thing. So well, I think, I mean, like, to your point, it's, like, it's a sign of an evolution of a new type of genre.
Right. Well, we should have learned our lesson back then.
I think the big thing that's, like, making people angry is that the two biggest properties, which is Fortnite, which is Epic Games, is, like, weird, whatever, crafting fucking thing. And Paladins is, they straight up just lifted the names. Like, they, like, Fortnite is Fortnite Battle Royale. Battle Royale is the original name for, like, the mods that Brendan Green used to make. And then Paladins just straight up Paladins Battlegrounds. Like, that, they did not mince anything there. And I think that's the big thing that's making people raise an eyebrow to it more so. Because, like, you didn't see, like, Doom like the Doom clone, you know?
Right, it wasn't like, yeah.
Paladins was already a hardcore Overwatch ripoff, right?
And that's the funny thing. It's like, Overwatch is literally, or I mean, Paladins is literally an Overwatch ripoff. Like, right. That's where, like, there's a Reinhardt type, there's, like, a Tracer type or whatever, like, that game got its start as an Overwatch ripoff, so it's funny that they're ripping off yet another.
I know, like, a shit ton game. Of people who stan.
Yeah, so people fucking go Paladins. In for that
yeah,
game.
Yeah, people go like, in for Paladins because isn't it free to play?
Yeah, it's because it's free to play. Right?
Yes. So that's like a perk, and that's same with like Fortnite Battle Royale. It's free, like you can just download it. Like you don't have to own the weird pre-release thing for Fortnite, which is also going to be a free-to-play game when that hits 1.0. Mm-hmm. It's just you can download, and it's also on PS4, and PUBG is only on Xbox One and PC, and Xbox One version sucks, whereas Fortnite Battle Royale plays fine on consoles from what I've seen of it, so it's like another plus in that direction. I'm interested to see how Paladins Battlegrounds, I almost said Battle Royale, works, because I don't know if that Overwatch style of heroes and stuff seems like it'd be like a good system, but I mean, who knows? Like, maybe it's the perk it needed. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as more trends for 2018 are concerned, my friends, I regret to inform you that my trend is, I think video game journalism is gonna sacrifice even more of its soul this year. I have to say,
I what altar though?
Last
Josh
year
Rolling
we saw
at what altar?
We saw some of this stuff happen firsthand. Some of us experienced it in very bad ways, and I gotta say, I don't think it's looking up. I think overall media itself is
divest
like
from games.
Super.
Journalism.
No, I think overall. It's really messed up to see how devalued journalism and media and writing is in general. And I don't think that it's like we need video game journalism less than we ever did. I feel like it's just that continuously people are getting convinced that this is something that like the world doesn't need. And that like, you know, the people who are behind it are like pretentious or malevolent or have bad intentions. And like, there's this huge narrative spinning around, and every day I feel like I see another reasonable person taken by this idea that like journalists are evil or some shit, like we're the bad guys. And I just don't, it's crazy to me because so much stuff goes under the radar that like you need journalists to expose, and that stuff's just gonna like continue to run amok. And I'm hoping we, you know, something happens, there's some tipping point for people to realize that, like, hey, this is actually a worthwhile endeavor. But I don't know. I don't see it happening this year. Maybe you guys are more positive on it.
Are you practicing your best? Hey, YouTube, what's up? What's up, guys? What's up, YouTube?
We're actually going to start filming the Bad End podcast because we're pivoting to video.
Yeah, we're pivoting to video. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Bad End show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think what you hopefully will see, like, in light of that, is that if that does happen and people don't go the route of working for companies doing like branded journalism type stuff, which is like totally fine, I think that hopefully you'll see smaller publications sprouting up that are like not these like totemic organizations that we're used to, and ones that are led by like that have like a really strong viewpoint on a specific angle, and those publications can like survive on like, you know, they publish once every week or two or something, and they can have like a writer every so often to like write a piece, so that you can get like kind of like you'll still have big sites that cover like big stuff, but hopefully you'll have people that are down to also just start their own things, and people are interested, and the people that are interested in reading about games will be able to find kind of their niche, even if it's not inside of these like massive organizations.
I've had like an opposite view where I've, or in a sort of similar kind of like video game journalism is on the downward slope kind of way, that like the only publications that can exist in this kind of hostile landscape is the one are the ones that are owned by big mega corporations, and like the best possible outcome would be that these organizations allocate enough funding to just hire your favorite writers, and so they all like join stables, you know.
Right,
I guess the way I see it, because I can't imagine, like, after seeing all the stuff that happened in 2017, that like small independent games websites will survive, you know. I think, and this is a and this is a bad example because I'm not but like Destructoid, for instance, ran on their like whole independent you know game outlet rep for years and years, and I think they just got bought out by some like small Canadian firm.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Killscreen, which had to pivot to events and fuck over their entire staff, and looking at stuff like even like Joystick, which is run by what, AOL, but they had like a pretty small staff because they're just like a small video game blog of like maybe less than a dozen people. And god, there's another Offworld, obviously. That was like a big one that was like very long form focused, had like an all woman staff, like it was very focused on indie games too, and that got shuttered basically by Boing Boing. It's just like it's weird because I feel like also if you're at a bigger publication you does have more access, but then you're also like more at the head or at the behest of like other editors and like advertisers or whatever, and like it's like IGN runs like way more sponsored content than like what Waypoint does, where they have like fast food sponsored content, you know. It's like it depends on the, but whereas like a smaller outlet would not have that much access to like big name developers and won't know like the names of PR people or PR firms, and they like run at a disadvantage because they don't have those connections. So it's like this hard middle ground where it's like it's hard for sites to survive because you can't survive on ads alone. You have to like do streams and you have to have podcasts and you have to kind of like have this audience facing staff as well as doing the shit that you need to do for your job and like covering news and writing features and everything.
Yeah, I think like that type of journalism is only tenable for large publications, and I think that's it's kind of like a it's not diminishing returns, what is it, it's like it's just like it's a war of like economy and scale where it's hard to say like what is actually worth someone's time. So I think I'm thinking specifically in the domain of writing. I hope that smaller sites can flourish while recognizing that like, yeah, like big publications, like if you're not doing some sort of like video or streaming something, like you're probably fucking up to like continue to drive that sort of user base that consumes like a ton of video game content. Whereas people that are interested in like specifically writing can hopefully find a home somewhere else because it's not, it doesn't require like a ton of overhead to just like spin up even just like a Medium publication or something and just like post interesting writing on there. So
yeah, at a higher level, I think just the culture itself is going to become more fragmented, which is like, you know, in the way that Kyle is saying that like indie publications are might become more of a thing as they like continue to carve out their niche. You know, our good friend of the show Gareth Damian Martin has this publication Heterotopias that focuses on like games and architecture, and they're like carving out their own little niche. It doesn't have to be this like huge thing or even like a relatively large thing, as long as like they're covering what they like and they have the resources to pay their writers and to sustain themselves. That's like what they're in it for, right? They're like, I don't know if at this point they're really trying to make huge profits off of this venture right now. But I think that like there will be more spaces for like different people who are looking for different things in video games to kind of like find what they're looking for, whether it's a publication or a game itself, right? Like if you're into these like smaller indie games, I'm sure that that games will fragment and offer more of that. Whereas if you just want your like big ass platform Destiny 2, Destiny 3, or Battlegrounds that you just want one game to play for the entire year, you'll be able to find that too, right? Like I just think that like the breadth of experiences that you can have in video games is starting to get larger, and so media will have to kind of change to reflect that. But at a higher level, Kyle, like I think that you're definitely right that branded content, I see that becoming more of a thing in 2018. That's a big one.
Oh, totally.
I want to like just bounce off something else you said about like big games. And I think that there was like a thing for a while that people knew, and it's not something crazy, where it was like all the people that like buy a console and buy Madden and that's all they play. Like those people don't read games publications. Same people that only buy FIFA or only buy like the next Halo game or only buy Call of Duty, like aren't like reading game stuff. And I think what's happening is that as games, like the whole mode of games right now is starting to turn towards this notion of games as a service, which then builds up more of these types of games where games themselves are platforms and they have certain websites that are dedicated to these games themselves. And it's like all they do is run content about Destiny 2. Like all they run is content about Overwatch. And so even like the games community at large that used to play a lot of these like big games together is starting to just be like, oh, I self-describe as an Overwatch player, so now all I do is read the single Overwatch site, and I'm not necessarily going to the big site because I don't care about Destiny if all I play is Overwatch. Mm-hmm. So I think you have this sort of thing happening, which is, I think, new in a lot of ways to games, because structurally what was shifting before was like a shift to mobile or something, but even then that was like a whole different player base. And I think what this is doing is actually starting to segment like core video game readers to start looking at other publications for like more of this specific type of content, because the games are crafted in such a way where like that's the way you're supposed to engage with it. So I think that there's going to be like a lot, like, I mean, there's already a lot of them now, but I think we'll see a lot more sites and stuff that are like this kind of middle ground between like corporate branded content and like a website that just runs Overwatch content. There's gonna be like six of those or however many.
It's already
more
started
now.
Man, it's already,
yeah, it's
crazy
already a
now.
Thing,
like, isn't that just IGN?
USA Today just started one, as far as I, like, USA Today now has an Overwatch site.
Yeah, so like it's 100%. It's like people defining these verticals. Okay. And I think what's the other thing is that like a lot of like the big news websites like USA Today and stuff aren't going to sit around and see the traffic these things drive and not think like, oh, maybe we should talk about Battlegrounds, and so we're gonna have a whole vertical dedicated to this, and we can throw like 10x the time
like the
of money.
Worst job to have.
But they can like throw
imagine
way
like
more money.
The
that's
only
like
thing you're right about.
I mean, some people love Battlegrounds.
Some people
want
to do that. Like it doesn't have to be good writing.
I mean, friend of the show Nicole Carpenter, she only writes about Overwatch for .esports, which sounds kind of like hell. Like that's
dude,
all. She
I only
does.
Write about Hearthstone.
She just writes news about,
yeah, Josh
all
writes about Hearthstone all day.
Freaking Kotaku.
Some other stuff though, like occasionally you do profile,
I mean, so does,
like you expand outside,
I mean,
of
so does Nicole
Hearthstone.
Like that's just how we keep
yeah,
that's how
true.
We keep ourselves
yeah.
sane basically, right? But it's but
it's the problem of being
there
an
are people who are into these scenes so much that it doesn't actually bother them that much that their day job or whatever is just covering this one game.
Sounds wild to me.
You know,
I maybe because like my job is to play every game, so in a way I play,
yeah,
which is
the
also
problem.
Puts me at a disadvantage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like I don't know, it's I play too many games, so it's hard for me to get focused on one game. Like that's why I've been playing a lot of PUBG, because it's been like such a dead period. I'm like, I can get really into PUBG right now because I don't have any other obligations, and it's great.
Yeah.
But then I'm reviewing the new Final Fantasy Dissidia at the end of the month, so
I mean, I've been playing Hearthstone since 2014, baby. It's like it ain't stopping. It's like this shit is
never
for the
stopping.
Long haul, dude. Yeah, I don't even
about in.
Yeah.
All right, wait, Matt. Yeah. Other predictions for 2018. You're the news guy. You got to know what's hot. What's up?
What's hot?
I don't know. Nothing. It's January. Like you. Like nothing's bubbling.
But predictions. Gotta have
predictions?
Some predictions.
I just have ideas of what things should happen. You know. I don't know if. I don't know if Nintendo can replicate year one unless they have like a launch every month like they did last year. You know,
Dude, that was next level.
Yeah, which was great. So I don't know if they can do that again, but who knows? I mean, I feel like they can with a combination of like virtual console releases and like a couple big games. But that's one thing. I think loot boxes is still something that I'm going to be writing about a lot this year.
God help you.
I'm so tired also,
but I think that's just going to keep on being a thing. Yeah. I think that like as it like continues on its path, there will be other politicians who are going to try to like score some easy points to try to keep it in the news cycle and be like, hey, we're going to try to investigate this, and I'm just going to sit there going like, no, I'm tired. Yeah. Stop.
Don't make me write about this again.
It was amazing. This morning, I woke up to my alarm going off, and right now it's like playing NPR when it goes off on the speaker, and like in like a weird like semi-awake state, Brianna Wu was on the show like talking about Gamergate and like politics.
Oh,
and I was
my
like,
God!
I was like, is this really
escape.
Happening right now?
It's a fever dream, here, dude. It's a nightmare. Oh,
yeah. Lord, I will say this about loot crates. I think what's happening is just blood in the water, and I feel like a lot of people are seeing red, and so any mention of loot crates is going to throw people into a frenzy, and so it makes the job harder because there's going to be people who are going to try to rein that in. Like, I think there was a bad take, I won't say it's a bad take, but there was a take in the previous week from Polygon that was like, Overwatch has good loot crates, Destiny 2 has bad loot crates, Destiny should copy Overwatch's loot crates, right? And
I know the guy who wrote that.
It was such a weird, it didn't make any sense.
I think you could say whatever you want about that guy because I know him, so.
Right, but like more than anything though, I felt like regardless of like the arguments or the reasoning or anything like that, I think more than anything, it's literally that was an attempt to sort of like rein in the sort of hysteria that's around loot crates, because you can't say loot crates anymore. It's like throwing a bomb into a crowd. Like, they just all like nobody thinks
analogy.
Rationally about loot crates anymore, right? And so it's like,
and it's like two buzzwords, like Overwatch, people love Overwatch and also hate Overwatch, and then also Destiny 2, which people just hate. Like, I don't think anyone
the
likes
URL
Destiny
was
2.
Like Destiny, Overwatch, loot crate,
right.
Vader.
It's like SEO.
Dash. Yeah, like
gambling, yeah. Like, I think like what makes the job harder is that like you can't say loot crates in like a critical matter without people having already made up their minds that all loot crates are bad.
Oh yeah.
And so like you're gonna see more of those like, well, some loot crates are good, maybe we should just all copy Overwatch's loot crate, but like Overwatch's loot crates aren't that great either, you know? But like,
It's like they're still loot crates and they have bad drop rates. Like they're not great either.
So I think that's just going to continue to be a thorn in our collective sides for 2018.
It sucks because I was hoping with the shit show that Battlefront 2 was that this would help dial it back. But I just think it made it worse. Like, I just think people are more angry than they've ever been before.
Well,
and it's like really upsetting.
And like the damage to EA wasn't even permanent. Like, their stock is already recovered. Like, they're already back up.
Yeah.
On the grounds that they have a strong 2018 slate, including Titanfall 3, a series that I love but has historically sold very poorly.
What?
Yeah.
How has that turned into a passion project? That was like the biggest game to ever be pitched ever, and now it's like a weird like indie project that EA does.
It's so weird, yeah, because like Titanfall 1 was like so high.
It was like the
Xbox
biggest. It was like, oh, it was the Call of Duty team and the robots.
I was at Tokyo Game Show the year Titanfall 1 was announced, and I was in line at the customs for the Narita Airport with a guy from Respawn, on the Titanfall team, and he told me that there was an assured confidence that Titanfall would be the game to launch the Xbox in Japan, because if there's one thing they knew about Japanese gaming culture is that they love giant robots.
I remember that. No, I remember that being a story.
And he was right behind me going like, yeah, you know, I know the Xbox is historically not sold well in Japan, but I think the Xbox One's going to turn it all around. Why? Titanfall. People love robots here. And I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, and we got, and they did. Like, on the show floor, they had a giant, like, replica Titanfall mech, right? With like moving arms and things like that. And like nobody was at the Xbox area at all during Tokyo Game Show. And like,
they probably pick up the controller and be like, what the fuck is this thing? Like, I've never touched this in my life.
Like, where's my XP bar?
Like, I was walking back and forth just to get a look at the robot, but it was like, it was empty. And I was so sad. And I felt really bad.
It also feels super American, dude.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's like so such a shooter.
Yeah, it's super. It's fun. Like I Titanfall 2 especially is like way better than the last one. But it's just, I don't know. Like there's something fun to the movement, but it doesn't feel. It definitely feels more Call of Duty-esque, if anything else, just because it's very quick and very easy to get a grip on. But it's just like only sometimes you can call down a giant robot and walk around with it and shoot. Or slice or whatever, depending on the robot.
Yeah,
you get.
Don't get me wrong. I love Titanfall as a series, and like Titanfall 2 was like one of my favorite games of 2016.
Yeah,
but like,
feels good. Yeah,
it's weird that EA stocks rebound based on like strong. Like, oh yeah, they got Titanfall 3 coming up. EA is already good now, and I'm like, what? No.
Yeah, because Titanfall 2 was like sent out.
Yeah,
time.
That series
they'd
has
like put it between like what Battlefield 1 and then Call of Duty. I think it was the week after.
Like,
it's like the worst possible timing for their poor
like,
game.
I, maybe not if it's like actually a big game, but it's like not a big game.
It deserves so much better, but like the past two
it's
games
just a bunch
have
of
just
shooters,
not.
Yeah,
and I was talking with Kat, our boss, about like, and she's like, you know, she brought up the fact that there was like circumstances for why both of those games didn't like meet sales, right? Like the first one was an Xbox One exclusive on a platform that did not sell well its first year.
Yeah,
it was a terrible idea.
Yeah, and then the second one was competing with Battlefield one of the best-selling games of that year. And
the game's also great.
So you know, maybe if Titanfall 3 does come out in like a non-competitive period, it'd be fine. But like, I don't know. Maybe they just hate Titanfall 3 over there already. Just like, yeah, we're going to...
Yeah. I think it's also the fact that Titanfall doesn't have the name recognition of, like, Battlefield or Call of Duty. So I think that's, like, a knock against it, too. Or even, like, looking at... Well, like, this past... It was, like, October 27th, and when Mario came out, Wolfenstein 2 came out, and Assassin's Creed, which are all three recognizable properties. Like, people know Wolfenstein from forever... Mario, obviously, from forever. Assassin's Creed from forever. So it's like, and they're all very different games. So I feel like they all had their own kind of like corner to like perform well. And they all three of those games sold really well. Or except for Wolfenstein. Wolfenstein, like, no one cared about that game for some reason. But I mean,
sadly,
like, Wolfenstein sold okay. But it didn't sell great.
Did do game
because
busters.
People don't. There's no multiplayer or whatever. Yeah. That's the reason.
Is that the excuse?
I don't know. That's my excuse. That seems to be like people don't buy games on multiplayer anymore. It seems to be a thing, which is kind of sad.
That's the worst. I'd rather just give me like a 4-hour game rather than tacked on multiplayer.
Yeah.
Same. But yeah, I think the problem with the Titanfall thing was like it was three shooters within the realm of like three weeks. Like that's a lot of shit. Yep. And two were recognizable franchises. One was like a franchise that was like, oh, it's finally available on PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And that was like the big thing about it. So I don't know. It's weird. Maybe it has potential. Is Titanfall 3 for sure this year?
I didn't know it was
confirmed.
For this year either. I don't know, but that's just what I've been reading is all the analysts have been pegging EA's stock on
Titanfall 3.
Titanfall 3 and EA Sports games, and it's like, yeah, and that's why they're going to have a strong team.
I mean, EA Sports is a safe bet always because it's just
Anthem?
Naturally.
What's the deal with Anthem?
What about Anthem?
Yeah.
I saw this.
I don't know. So that's like confirmed for this year. But I don't think that's going to be this year. I see it getting delayed for sure. Like spring 2019, and we'll see more footage of it at E3. And then they'll be like, sorry, not 2018. And that'll be the big thing for it.
What are the big things coming out this year that we know about?
I wrote so many lists last week on just this topic, and I cannot think of any of them right now. Anthem.
New Call of Duty.
I have a prediction that there will be at least one game that we have never heard of that's going to like be the number one most played game on Twitch, and then everyone's going to end up loving it.
Oh, the PUBG of 2018.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have another
totally
one.
I totally believe that. There's already this game on Twitch right now called They Are Billions, which is
that came out of nowhere.
It's like, and it's so not a Twitch game. It's like a RTS tower defense horde mode game that has for some reason just like caught fire on Twitch.
Yeah,
it's not even like a RimWorldy type thing with like emergent story and stuff. It's literally just like a crunchy fucking hard strategy game, like real time strategy game. So I think we'll see, and it's doing well on Twitch. It's not like gangbusters, but I think we'll definitely see another. I mean, we'll see probably one every month, but definitely see. I'm with you, Josh. Like some new thing we've never heard of.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty excited for those, to be honest.
Yeah.
I just don't think PUBG is like a flash in the pan kind of thing, though. I think it does have legs. I think people are going to...
Yeah.
And I
agree.
So I'm not really sure it's going to be... after this year, I don't think we can start calling things the PUBG of blank year, because PUBG is going to just keep on going for the next couple of years, I think. I mean, that's just my guess, but...
I mean, we'll see.
Yeah,
people get bored.
I don't see PUBG dying.
I just mean in the sense that it will blow up in a similar way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Not that it'll replace PUBG type.
Right.
Thing. I mean, kind of like getting over it kind of became a sensation. Not in the same scale as PUBG, but I feel like getting over it. Like, I heard about that game because I follow Bennett Foddy's work, but then I was just seeing it on Twitch and I was like, that's really weird.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I guess like from the co-op, like maybe it's
yeah,
like
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Seems like
a
new co-op, I guess.
You know what's weird is I don't watch, like, I don't follow streamers or anything like that, but now that all my favorite video game websites I do follow have their own independent stream like sessions, I just see what they're streaming, and that tends to be what everybody else is streaming.
Right.
Yeah. It's like a nice... Yeah, that's kind of how I see it, too. Because I don't follow any particular stream. Like, I don't really tune into, like, any... Like, I watch Giant Bomb stuff, and that's kind of, like, the closest I get to streaming. And I feel like they usually go with what's in the moment and what's popular and, like, hit, but they also do, like, weird other shit, too, but... Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any predictions for 2018, really. Like, I just feel like, yeah, we're gonna be stuck in microtransaction hell, as always.
It's gonna get uglier.
I have a prediction.
It's gonna keep getting ugly. There's gonna be a lot of game delays. I predict most of the big games for 2018 will not come out this year. I honestly foresee this being kind of a dead year compared to last year, because I feel like last year there were so many games all the time. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is gonna be like that weird off year. There's like maybe one or two huge games and not much else.
Oh,
like,
I have
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yep.
I can see that getting delayed.
I think it's happening. It's like half.
I feel like it's happening this year, but I don't think it's happening in spring. I feel like that's going to be a fall game.
Mm-hmm.
Like October, November.
Mm-hmm. I think Nintendo is going to kill the 3DS.
Oh, yeah. That's already dead.
It's not dead. It's not dead yet. But like, I think this year, they'll be like, they're going to sunset it.
They're still
like,
releasing 2DS stuff, though.
No, I feel like that's. I feel like that was the last hurrah, though. They released like the new 2DS.
It's like the Metroid.
They released
the
like,
Metroid remake,
yeah, like,
and I think it's like.
Yeah.
There's no like.
And style savvy, like it's done.
Like graphically, the Switch runs laps around the 3DS, but like, doesn't the 3DS have some sort of like, I don't know, like lifestyle appeal? Like you can like slip it into your pocket, and
I just think the Switch just totally supersedes it. I think where it fails is like for kids, like the 2DS is totally a thing, but like I could see them keeping a digital shop open and not actively like grabbing new stuff for it, like kind of like the DS I feel like had like a little bit of a life after it was done through the eShop. They're not gonna like kill the eShop when they kill the console, but I could totally see them be like, we're done producing the 3DS, we're not selling anymore, we're like, and because like you've also like their whatever the Nintendo Direct was last year, they're like working on like a lot of like really big stuff, like a new Kirby, there's like a new Metroid game, there's like a few other new ones, plus whatever they announced at E3 this year. Like there's like a lot of stuff that they're working on in the pipe that feels like they're just gonna go all in on that.
The new Metroid's gonna be Switch.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They merged like both of their like hardware. Oh, sorry, the portable and console divisions.
Yeah.
And it's like, I feel like it's not super tenable to work on like a lot of like these big, like a new Fire Emblem or something. Like there's a lot of like big stuff that would be coming out this year that feels like they're just going to put all their talent to just start working like solely on the Switch. So, I mean, that's my
prediction.
Yeah,
like they already announced like the new Pokemon is going to be Switch. So I feel like Pokemon's done because they just did Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon, which like really wasn't even a sequel. It was like nothing. So it's kind of like this. I feel like last year was like it had a few great games, like that new Metroid or the Metroid remake was apparently pretty good, and like a few other 3D, like it had another Fire Emblem, that weird remake from like the old ones or whatever, and like they had like a pretty solid year, like surprisingly, but it definitely felt like they're closing the book on that system. Like the Switch was such a hit. It's also portable. They don't really have a need for the Switch anymore because they are not Switch, the 3DS, because they have the Switch now.
The DS was such a weird console. Remember how remember how they kept selling like that's what I mean by like lifestyle appeal, right? Like the DS was like it had a pedometer and it had like a bunch of puzzle games and it had a it had book
brain
apps,
training,
you know, right? Like brain training.
Yeah, brain age.
Like, it was such a weird little like thing that like appealed to other people just based on like I could play Brain Age on like the subway ride home, right? And like I don't know, like I can't, like I don't think the Switch can replace that, but I don't know how, like they got Beyonce to sell Brain Age. Remember that?
Whoa, I do not remember that.
Like I don't know. Like I don't know if the Switch can like replace the 3D like the DS family of consoles in that kind of way, but I guess like there's like really no need because like the DS, you know,
they
can't
made a
do.
Pedometer for the Wii U. Like, I mean, I feel like the lifestyle thing was something that Nintendo
that was like a
got
Nintendo
out
thing.
Of their system. Because
like the Wii had Wii Fit. Wii Fit was like a big. That's when my mom got a Wii U. She was like, "Oh, is Wii Fit gonna be on that too?" And then Wii Fit came out, and she got a Wii U, and then was like, "Why do I have this console?"
It's not. I think it's something they've tried, and it might come back in like later incarnations. And maybe it'll just convert to being a thing that just the Switch does better than the 3DS did. Who knows? Maybe that's a good prediction that Nintendo will try some of this bullshit again and to limited amount of success. But I could see a pedometer doing okay on a Nintendo Switch, maybe. That
Put it in your backpack.
Also, if they're gonna do like mobile stuff, it's gonna be on your phone, right?
Because
that's something that they've been
that's a whole other thing that didn't exist.
That's
ever.
A whole thing that they're going to probably be doing more of, too. Like, if there is a new Wii Fit, it'll probably be for your phone type thing.
Right.
Like, Nintendo
Fit. That would be dope, actually. I want that shit.
That one's on me, Nintendo. You're welcome. Does anybody have any other predictions?
No. I'm, like, I don't know.
I have one, Josh. I have one more. And this one is actually your thing. Val's card game is going to come out, and it's going to be one of the hottest things on Twitch.
Artifact's going to be so hot.
It's
going to
be some hotness. I have no idea what that game is going to be.
I'm actually really curious how, like...
It's Val's making a new game.
Val
that's
doesn't
a big
make
deal.
Games.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. I don't think
you get the Gordon Freeman card.
People brush it off.
Remember when Val used to make games? Damn.
Yeah, it's like shock.
I've been playing...
That reveal is so funny to me. Just like so much video evidence of everyone booing. It's amazing. It's kind of the most incredible thing.
I think it's gonna be a surprise hit. I think people are gonna
like it.
A surprise hit, dude. What are you talking about, dude? Yeah, it's a freaking digital card game.
Because I think people right now are like already primed to just want to hate this game because they're like, another card game. And I think that like.
They're people that don't play card games.
I think the thing is, like, Valve moves deliberately, and I do not think that they would make a card game if they didn't feel like they had something good on their hands. So I think this game is going to come out, and there's going to be a lot of people who give you one of these, which is like, you know, it's always weird that Valve was doing a card game because the space is mine. It's like Hearthstone. It's like the Witcher game. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but this game's pretty good.
I'm not going to let you frame a freaking Valve game as the underdog here, okay?
Yeah, that's kind of, I don't
it's
think...
It's not an underdog,
I feel like
Kyle.
There's
it's a fucking Valve
game, I think the world is
game,
different.
Dude.
It's a world... The world is different. Like, I think people... I would not be surprised if people who play...
I think there's grouchy
people who play Hearthstone, like,
it.
Probably don't know who Valve is. Like, it's...
Dude, what are you talking
okay,
about?
That is
on
what
crazy...
Grounds
someone that,
what are you talking about?
If someone
about?
Only plays Hearthstone, how would they know about Valve?
Steam...
Why would they know about Steam if they play Hearthstone? Why would they know about Half-Life? Those games, like, that's old.
Wait, what are you talking? Steam is the
are you, the do you video think game like babies like, are playing Hearthstone? PC, what is dude? Going on?
But if you have Steam, you don't necessarily associate the people that make Steam with the people that like make Half-Life. That's like that's so like old. Half-Life came out in like 98. That's like history. Like maybe okay, Counter-Strike.
Half-Life wasn't the last game Valve made.
Okay. No, but I'm saying that there's not the same brand recognition for Valve as like someone who makes a video game in the past like five or six years.
I would argue there is though.
First of all, I think you're underestimating like how much money Valve is making off of, for instance.
Oh no, dude! I know they make a ton of money. I'm just saying that like there's a very real situation where like they're making a game that's it's not a mod for one. Most of their games are based off mods. It's like totally original new thing, which is super rare for Valve, and it's rare in general for them to be making a game. I think you should totally couch your expectations for if this game is going to be good or not. But I'm saying that I think it probably will be good because like you're saying, they make so much money just like selling stuff on Steam that there's not like if there's no incentive for them to just make a game besides like, oh, we have a cool idea. We want to make a thing.
Yeah, I think it's just like there's grouchy people that are like people that don't play Hearthstone or people that don't play card games that are like, oh, another card game.
Okay, I hear that.
I feel like that's where the hesitation comes from. But I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I trust Valve, and I feel like there's still untapped space in the, like, what, there's, like, two dominant card games. Like, there's totally room for more. And, like, Hearthstone and Gwent are super different games. They play totally differently. Like, I don't know what the fuck Hearthstone's about, but I play a lot of Gwent. It's like, I don't know.
Like
it's
two?
Totally like, different.
Yeah, I still think that you're wrong about the extent to which people know about Valve, but... That's not a prediction.
I think people can know about Valve. I think they can know about Valve, but they do not necessarily directly associate them as being like someone who makes games. Like you can engage with the whole market of Steam and stuff and not encounter like Dota or like Portal, but even then that was a long time ago. Like they're not somebody that's like in the common discourse about like people who are making games each year.
I can see where you're coming from, but I disagree on that. I understand.
That's fine.
That, like,
yeah, you can totally disagree. I'm not saying my point is totally right.
I want to, you know, start taking us out of the episode here on my wish for 2018, which is I hope that in 2018, gamers will slow down a little bit, you know? Gamers will, when they read a story, maybe just sit down, think about, you know, count to 10. Think, is this worth getting mad about? And really think about that, you know? Because I feel that sometimes people are quick to anger. People are quick to hatred. They take things out on other people, whether it's on Twitter, whether it's on Reddit, whether it's on Discord, whether it's on Slack. And they get upset, you know, they take that anger out on other people. And I think the world would be a much more peaceful place if we all just grew up a little bit, you know? Just thought about the consequences of our actions. Remembered that there's always another human being on the other side of the screen. And that
thank you for
our,
this inspiration.
Our actions have consequences. And think about what you do a little bit more. That's my wish for 2018. I hope you guys are with me on this.
I'm with you.
That's not going to happen.
That was beautiful, man.
Look, thank you.
People not
it's
thinking.
A wish. It's a I'm not saying it's going to happen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a wish.
Pie in the sky.
For sure.
But
pie
maybe.
In the sky.
You know, maybe. You know what I've been thinking about is like, what if, like, getting pissed off at stuff real fast and, like, coming together on Reddit in like gamer solidarity to like dox someone and like try to burn their house down in some way. What if that's just like a trend? You know, it's a slim chance that's a trend because people have always been assholes.
Well, like that whole swatting thing happened where someone actually died and it was the wrong one. An innocent man died.
I mean,
so it's like that.
You're right.
I hope that discourages people from being shitty.
Yeah.
Like, I hope that was a wake up call to a lot of fucking people that were like,
mm-hmm.
Oh, this has consequences. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't a joke. Which, I don't know why that wasn't a like a realization before an innocent man had to die. But I do hope that is a wake-up call to a lot of people. I'm sure it was, like, honestly. Like, I think that was really shocking, because that's, like, the first time it's happened.
Yeah, and hopefully ever, the last.
Crazy.
The, yeah, hopefully again, the last, not yeah. a prediction, because God knows this shit's probably not going to happen whatsoever in 2018. But that's my wish, a 2018 wish of
optimism. We can wish. We can all wish.
Hope, because God knows I've got enough cynicism in my life. Does anyone else have anything to add?
No, it was good.
That was great, Josh.
Nice, nice way to end the episode on.
Anyway, Matt, thank you so much for coming on to the show. No Where problem. Can people Thanks. Find you? What are you working on? What do you have? You don't have to say that, but you know, if you want, you could plug yourself, plug your work.
Okay. Well, I work with Katie, so if you like the both of us, you can catch us at usgamer.net. I'm on Twitter. I'm a verified member of Twitter. At Law of TD, a username I started in high school and can't get rid of now. and yeah, that's it. And I'm glad. Thanks for inviting me on, guys. It was great.
Yeah, thanks for coming
Thank
on.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Again, we are Bad End. You can find us on Twitter at Bad End Podcast. You can email us at badendpod@gmail.com. We are also on Facebook, but we don't really use that. I always mention it every single time. But you know, you should email us and rate us and review us on iTunes, because that's a huge deal. That is a big help to us. And then just follow us on Twitter too. Like, if you don't, just hop on Twitter right now, follow us. We got good content on there. We got good jokes, good
It is surprisingly posts. Good content.
We create some good content on there. I'm proud of
Lots
it.
Lots of impressions personally. On
it's
the
really
tweets.
It's really just Josh.
It's just me, like, that's a lot of Josh.
I get bored and I'll slate like three things in the line up three things in the drafts, and some of these things have gotten us some followers. So we'll continue to grow, keep that ball of moss going down the hill. But again, thank you so much for listening, and let's have a good 2018. All right, see ya.
Bye.